Hello and welcome to Plotress.
This is Meg.
This is Lane.
And today we're talking about What is Love by Jen Comfort.
This was just published in 2024, and full disclosure, we did receive a complimentary ARC for this review.
Yes, I'm very excited to talk about this book. Before we start, I just have to say that for me, Jen Comfort is like my 100% my favorite contemporary author at this point in time. You know, there you go. I love her books.
I put a comment at the very end, but I suppose now is a good point to say it. I can't wait till she writes about a thing that resonates with me.
Yes.
Because, like, she's really talented and I have really enjoyed her stuff. But so far, the three themes she sort of delved into are, like, fun, but not something that I deeply need in my life. And I'm, like, really excited for the moment that she chances on the contemporary theme that, like, really works for me personally. Because she is so great at what she does.
I know. It's actually really funny because, I mean, part of the reason she's my favorite is that I am a total phantom, like, bitch.
Right.
Since the age of, I don't even know how old I was, 12 maybe? Right?
Like, I read The age of Phantom. CD in movie theaters.
Yes. I read Phantom by Susan Kay, and then I was like, oh my god, I love this. This is amazing. Yeah. And so she wrote a Phantom romance. Obviously, I was into it.
Right. So, like, someday she will write in my ish, and when that day comes, I will be very happy.
Mm-hmm. She's going to write a baseball romance, and usually Lane does not read baseball romances, but you would read this one.
I'd read it with trepidation, but I'd read it.
And because it's Jen Comfort, you would love it.
I hope that she would be able to do the research to my standards.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I would trust her enough to try it.
What I'm saying is I feel like she would, based on her previous history.
Fair. I mean, I don't know enough about Phantom to, like, have the confidence you do, because she could have made up a whole plot line and I would have been like, okay.
I am confident. I'm so confident. There was even a baseball reference in this one that I was like, oh, Elaine is going to be into that one.
I actually have a question for you about that at the end. It's in my notes.
Okay. Okay. Shall we talk about this book?
I think so. Meg, what is this book about?
Well, let me read you the book jacket, Lane. Answer. From the Latin word for crossroads, this is knowledge so common as to be obscure, the pursuit of which engages millions daily. Question. What is trivia?
Trivia is the magic in the mundane, the connection in the commonplace, and Maxine Hart's second favorite pastime. A self-proclaimed Brooklyn street rat and a high school dropout, Maxine has never been a fan of formal education. But thanks to her ADHD superpowers, she's a glutton for knowledge and a good fight. And when Maxine enters the trivia game show Answers, her brilliance, coupled with her penchant for big bets, devastates her competition. Even record-holding 76-time winner Teddy Ferguson.
Or was it their kiss the night before they faced off that threw the buttoned-up professor off his game? Now, Maxine and Teddy cross paths again in a high-stakes tournament against all-time Answers winners, including undefeated champion Hercules McKnight. With nothing in common but an insatiable appetite for knowledge and a desire to win, Maxine offers Teddy a deal. Combine their strengths to shore up their weaknesses. She'll push his tolerance for risk and improve his buzzer speed if he'll find creative ways to fill in the gaps in her education.
Except neither one of them foresaw just how scintillating learning could be.
There you go. I think it's a perfectly fine book jacket, truly.
Yeah, I'm nothing to say, change, add, modify. It doesn't spoil anything while giving you an idea of what the book's about.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny. So I don't know. I just have to say, here's the other thing I really like about Jen Comfort. I know we have other things to get on with before we do the series, but right now, so many contemporary romances are described as rom-coms, but they are not very funny. But Jen Comfort's books are so funny.
Yeah, I think this would be a conversation about what the word rom-com is trying to evoke.
Mm-hmm.
Because I agree with you that in terms of being both romantic and comedic, Jen Comfort is at the top of the class.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a whole genre of romance fiction right now trying to like recapture the plot, pacing, and idea of romantic comedy films.
Yes.
And let's be honest, a lot of those aren't that funny.
They're funny, but they're not, they have this like pathos at the end.
Well, to me, it's more that they fall into the line of like a tragedy is something that ends tragically, a comedy is something that ends happily.
Hmm.
Like they seem to follow that conceit of this is a feel-good movie more than somebody trying to actually write humor.
Yeah. Well, I just have to say this is some of the funniest writing I've read, especially in the romance genre, for a long time.
She's hilarious. Absolutely. But I can't see this being adapted into a rom-com film.
I could see it. I think I could see it, actually.
I think it's too innovative to line up with rom-com tropes.
Well, I think it would have to be, I'd actually talk about this later in the notes, I think it would have to be a competition movie. With a
romance.
Right,
which to me changes the spirit of it a lot.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, like, this is a compliment to Jen Comfort. The fact that yes. I cannot see it being easily adapted into a fucking Kate Hudson movie from 1999 is a compliment.
Yes. If it's not clear, we love you, Jen Comfort. We love
you. Like, me being like, this is not a good rom-com movie is not because the book is bad. It's because I don't actually like rom-coms.
Right. All right, back to business. As usual, we generated a random number between 1 and 50, and then we used that number to write summaries with that number as a word count. So for this episode, the number we generated was 8. Lane, take it away.
We did the same thing.
We were marked by a similar part of this book.
If auditory, visual, and kinesthetic learning don't work,
.. Here's mine. Now I want to get tutored in geography.
Here is the thing. This book's sexiness could have very quickly devolved into like teacher-student role play.
Uh-huh.
And it did not.
Uh-huh.
But the line it walked was very sexy.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Everyone, again,
yes, it does. Anyway, yes, I won't say it until the sexiness part, so. Tell us about some tropes.
So this is rivals to lovers. As the book jacket states, he's the reigning champion of 76 games when she takes the stage as a new competitor. And she not only unseats him, but then goes to have a streak of her own that, while not longer in duration, is larger in terms of winnings.
Yep.
And so from that initial encounter, they've sort of become a rivalry. They competed in a tournament style, like Revenge of the Winners, at some point in the past before this book begins. And now they're both being asked to do this mega tournament to end all tournaments.
Mm-hmm. So... yeah, and then there's that like additional trope of the rivals who team up to beat a bigger rival. Right?
Yes.
So that's why I said this is what I was talking about when we talked about how if this were going to be a movie, it would have to be like a competition movie where they're like training. There'd be lots of training montages and stuff like that.
And the training montage was the bulk of the book.
Mm-hmm. That's true. But I mean, in a movie, I think it would work. But we'll have to agree to disagree on this one. The other big trope I think for this one is the chaos versus order, right? She's like the chaos and he's the order.
Oh, he is so starchy.
Uh-huh.
I mean, Jen Comfort tried to make suspenders hot, and I will be honest, for all that they were brought up over and over and over again, my mental version of him still does not have suspenders.
But he still has glasses, though, doesn't he? Your mental version? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So she is Brooklyn, like, this tries to set itself up as a class conflict romance.
Mm-hmm.
She is Brooklyn college, high school dropout. He is professor at an Ivy League school with a degree from an Ivy League school and a British accent to go with.
Mm-hmm.
So there is, that ends up being almost a subversion of the class conflict trope. Because yes. At this point, she may have grown up a poor Brooklyn kid, but she's won $2 million on answers.
Yep. And he may have won $2 million on answers, but he spent it all on something.
Well, and his upbringing is not nearly as posh and privileged as she is making fun of him for.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. Should we talk about the book? Should we talk about it? Should we talk about it?
Yeah. I mean, there are more tropes, but whatever.
There are. They'll come up, probably. But yeah, I mean, I said this at the top of the episode, but Jen Comfort makes me like contemporary romance. I will read contemporary romance and sometimes I will enjoy it. But to be 100% honest with you listeners, I do it for you. I don't usually do it for me. But when there's a new Jen Comfort, I am so excited to read it.
She does a lot of things really, really well. But I am starting to see some through lines in her books.
Mm-hmm.
So in all three of them now, they've been forced to cohabitate
mm-hmm.
in some capacity, which in my opinion is great.
Yeah.
Because all of that constant proximity, one, means they're not ever like working against each other.
Mm-hmm.
And two, they can't keep their hands to themselves. And yes. That is made even more evident when they're only sleeping a bedroom door apart.
Well, I think that's one of the things I love about her books, too, is that Lane and I talk about this a lot, about how our favorite romances are people who are basically on the same side.
Right.
And even though in this book, Teddy and Maxine are rivals on this show, and they even say they hate each other, right?
Mm-hmm.
They team up to take down the other guy. So, like, they are on the same side.
Well, and what I also liked is their rivalry is essentially born of embarrassment.
Mm.
Like, she proves to him he's not infallible and his perfect system of order isn't protecting him.
Mm-hmm.
And he is the embodiment of what she feels like she's not good enough for.
Right.
And so for all that they both do say hurtful things to each other, like, you don't feel like anything unforgivable has happened that makes the idea that they like want to suck face all the time is unbelievable.
Yes, absolutely. I totally agree with you. Well, and part of it too is that there's been this attraction the entire time, but because they're embarrassed, they feel like they have to hide it, right?
Yes.
So that's
well, and for him, he's pretty in his own head, willing to own up to the fact that it was love at first sight for him.
Yeah.
But he sort of hates himself for loving her.
Yes.
Whereas she's much more, why am I attracted to him?
But yes.
That framing is also very much in character for both of them.
Yes, yes, yes. So, yes, she has through lines. But, you know, authors have through lines, and that's why we want to read them.
Yes.
You know, like, if I picked up Elisa Kleypas and no one had hectic color on their cheeks, I'd be like, whose book am I reading?
Yes.
So, there you go. But one of the things that she does that I really love is bring this sense of just bonkers over the topness to contemporary romance. I feel like it's a lot easier to have a bonkers historical romance, right?
Right.
Because it's a little bit removed from us. In contemporary romance, the bonkersness is like, oh, he's a billionaire, right? Which is not, right. It's not bonkers, right?
Right.
It's not wild and crazy. It's just a thing that he is. But here, he's a college professor. She's a high school dropout, whatever. You know, she has a job. They both are just like kind of normal people who happen to have been on this game show. And that is bonkers, right? That is the contemporary version of bonkers.
Yes. I mean, I think the other two books were in some ways more contemporary bonkers than this one.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I think you're right. The fact that she's not going for realism is what helps me enjoy it as a contemporary.
Totally. That's exactly what I meant to say. You understand what I'm trying to say, Lane.
I'm, yes. phraseology is why I would win on answers. No, I'm totally, God, no. Your third point, Meg, is fucking inspired.
Oh, just how horny it is. This whole book, they're both.
This book is so horny in like the weirdest, best way.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're just hot for each other all the time, even though they don't want to be.
Well, and there are a lot of ways that the tropes are kind of played with here. Like, how often is the guy gets turned on by a woman wearing his clothes? But here it's a sweatshirt he lent her on the first date that she's been wearing for like weeks.
Yes. Oh, so good.
It's just like they are just so constantly hot and bothered by each other and in denial.
Yes.
And incapable of being chill at all. And both of them are sort of just like kind of aware it's inevitable they are going to fail at keeping their hands off of each other.
Mm-hmm.
Because, this is also a book where they strike a deal that has rules. And one of those rules is no fraternizing.
Yes. And you love it when they can't hold up their side of the deal.
Yes. Well, and Maxine straight up is like, okay, we'll see how long he sticks to this. And even he at one point has a breakdown, which was perfect. And I will not say anything else about it because spoilers, but where he's like, fuck, we're definitely going to fuck.
Uh-huh. Oh my God. It works so well because there's just this sexual tension the entire time.
And even once they're having sex, there's still somehow sexual tension because there's just enough. This is forbidden. This is illicit because they're about to be on this game show together.
Yes. Loved it.
Okay. So I want to state for the record that I am kind of obsessed with this book.
Uh-huh.
But there were a couple of things that really stuck out to me like sore thumbs. And so I do want to talk about them. Not because they lessened my enjoyment of the book, but because I think in this one, more than the others, I saw some of the infrastructure of the book because it needed to happen, not because Jen Comfort was particularly like devoted to fleshing it out.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, very, very early in the book. So like, I don't think this is necessary to spoiler tag, but if you truly want no like conversation at all, flash forward. But like, again, I'm talking about like the first 10%. Max and Teddy are preparing for this new ultimate tournament. And Teddy goes to say, hey, I don't think I can be in it because of a conflict of interest that happened 20 years ago. You probably didn't see it in my file, but like, it's there. And pretty quickly, the producers come back to him and go, no big deal. You're good to be on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And even I was suspicious in that moment of like, either this is going to be a major plot thing and like come back to bite Teddy, or this is just an oversight.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of neither.
It was not forgotten, but it wasn't major.
But like, I just don't believe it was in character for Teddy
to just be like, okay.
To have somebody offhand be like, not in writing, just like a producer running out a door being like, hey, we looked into your situation. Not a situation at all. See you in a couple weeks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I ended up harping on it mentally for like probably far longer than I should have, because the whole book is about how uptight and orderly and like by the book he is.
Yeah.
Even the reason he's probably got a conflict of interest is reflective of just how anal and organized and report based he is.
Yes.
So I just found that like a little bit of a convenient hand wave moment, kind of exacerbated by the fact that the guy they're both trying to take down in the tournament is very one dimensional.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you don't ever get like an explanation or an understanding of why things played out the way they did in the past.
Yeah. 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 That's fair. I guess that actually didn't bug me. I was like, okay, you know, because I felt that it was enough for him to have fulfilled his uptight anal starchiness.
I mean, what you're supposed to read is he's just so desperate to spend more time around Max that he will accept the convenient answer.
That too, yeah.
But I just like, He never takes the easy way out for personal benefit at any other point in the book.
Ever.
Even where Max is concerned. So I just found that to be like a really out of character moment.
That's true. What was your other moment?
My second one is like sort of silly and it's literally a single line, but I want this to be my fucking crusade. There's a running joke about Pliny the Elder dying of a volcanic explosion, trying to save a friend.
Uh-huh.
And Mac, it's at one point, again, this is not spoilery, has a thought of, I'm realizing now that he didn't do it to save a friend. And the implication is supposed to be that, like, you only do that for someone you're in love with.
Uh-huh.
And I just want to say for the record that this celebration of romantic love as inherently superior to platonic love is bullshit. I understand it was a throwaway funny line. Like, I am not actually trying to nitpick here.
Are you about, saying, like, are you Jen saying comfort. you would run into a volcano for me, Lane?
Sure. I'm saying this idea that, like, Pliny the Elder must have been, like, romantically interested in the person in Pompeii in order to want to save them is a little bit like, okay, Jen Comfort. Like, let's not shit on platonic love in a celebration of romantic love.
Oh my gosh.
But everything else was like perfect.
Yes, I love this book. I don't know if we want to do a spoiler tag. I actually don't think it needs one.
I think it does.
Oh, okay. So we will talk about the ending of the book yes. a little bit later.
So,
but let me just say that I loved it.
Okay.
I loved it. I loved it so much. Okay. Content warnings, Lane.
So Teddy seems to have always had a complicated hero worship relationship with his father where nothing Teddy ever really did was good enough, which is sort of exacerbated by the fact that Teddy is adopted, though none of that is really explored super deeply in the text. But you know it will never be resolved because now Teddy's father has profound dementia.
Yeah, so that's...
And the reality of his condition is on the page.
Yeah, yeah. I will say Jen Comfort has this as a content warning in the beginning of the book, and she's mm-hmm. very clear about, like, if you can't read this, like, what chapter to skip and everything. Max has a really difficult past as well.
Yeah.
Her mother had a gambling addiction. Mm-hmm. She loves her mother. She has fond memories of her mother, but she knows that her childhood and upbringing weren't exactly quote unquote normal.
Right.
And then that is exacerbated by the fact that she because she has ADHD and because she has a different way of learning, traditional school was not for her.
Yes. So Max has ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something she thinks about every second paragraph,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. which is very in character.
Yes. But
you will not forget it. Yeah. And then the only other thing I'd say is there's sort of a, not throwaway, but extremely minor realistic depiction of racism, especially when it comes mm-hmm. to like British upper classes. Teddy's parents were disowned from Teddy's father's family because of their interracial marriage.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about sexiness, Lane.
It was so random, but so hot.
So hot. Her previous books had a lot of sexual tension, and the sex scenes themselves were well written, but there weren't like a ton of them on the page. And I feel like this book stepped it up.
It really did, and kudos.
Mm-hmm. There's this scene. There's this, like, 69 scene that was so random, so sexy, and so, like, what am I reading right now?
Yeah. No, it was a series of events that is so only would happen in a romance novel.
It was amazing. I loved it so much. Like, I cannot tell you how much I loved it.
It's everything about it was pitch perfect.
Everything.
Everything. Like, it was so... I think the only, this from in a spoiler-free sense, from what the location they're in is making him think of to the hidden vagina zipper she has in her outfit. Like, yes. All right.
Cool. I felt like Teddy in that moment. Like, what is happening right now? But I like it though.
Yeah.
He was amazing. The geography lessons, Lane.
This was the sexiest part of the book.
Oh my God.
So they've been cohabitating, desperate to avoid each other, had the skydiving incident, and she starts fussing essentially during their tutoring session because she needs new stimuli and new ways to learn, or she gets bored and mentally checks out because she has ADHD, in case you didn't know. And Max is intentionally antagonizing Teddy. And Teddy says, all right, fine. If the only thing you're focusing on is my dick, we will use that as your tutoring mechanism.
Yeah, I mean, yes. This works for so many reasons. So Lane talked about the student-teacher role play aspect, which I think works in this book because, and we've talked about this many times in many episodes, when an author acknowledges something, it becomes less problematic, right?
Yes.
And Max is like, oh my God, I'm hot for teacher. Like, this is amazing. I want to play this out, right?
So but she's like, never plays a schoolgirl.
Correct. She just is getting tutored.
Right. But so there is no leaning into the she is disempowered part of it. It is just literally the, yeah, okay, teach me.
Yep. Yep. And then the other thing is, right now in romance novels, this praise kink is like really a big thing. And I get it. It's very sexy.
Here for it.
Yeah. I think it depends on how it's written. Like, if it just comes out of nowhere, I'm like, okay, that's fine, I guess, you know?
Yeah.
But here, like, again, it makes so much sense, right? Like, she is starved for praise in general. And the fact that he's like, gonna give it to her in many different ways is amazing.
It's also not over the top.
Yes.
It was deployed perfectly as a weapon.
Yep. So good.
But while there are many other fade to black or mention in passing sequences after that, Jen Comfort is aware that you can't throw that kind of sex scene in the middle of the book and then have nothing else.
Uh-huh. Oh my God, Lane. I was not expecting what happened, but I was so into it. Oh my God. In the TV studio.
Yeah. There's just some emotional, okay, I'm going to trust you through this moment. And some
so good.
Relieved / like loving cunnilingus.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's combined with well, let's give you an alibi for why you were back here.
Yeah. Kiss me quick. Someone might be coming, except no one's coming. It's great. It's great. It's great. It's
so good. It's so good. It was so sexy. I was reading that and I was just like, oh my God, this is perfect. It was so good. It was so good. I loved it so much. All right. Should we talk about the end of the book?
Yes. So this is a spoiler tag faux show. So if you are done listening to us because you just want to go read this, highly recommend that plan of action.
Yeah, do it. If you've already read the book, stay on the line. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you are leaving us now, farewell.
Okay.
Okay.
Yes, Meg.
The end of this book, I'm going to be honest. I was like kind of worried the entire time, like just kind of low key. How is she going to pull this off? Because this is a competition book. This is a competition storyline. They are going to be competing with each other at the end of this book. And there's only one way this can end. Either Teddy wins or Maxine wins. Right.
Right.
But she doesn't do that. And I loved it so much.
Oh, I liked it because the cheese factor was 15 out of 10.
Yes. I mean, first of all, cheese factor is 15 out of 10. He proposes to her on air. Oh, my God. And then the answer to the final question, or excuse me, the question to the final answer, because we're in answers, is the title of the book. So the title of the book is in the book, What is Love? Right?
Right.
And then they both lose, like, as a grand gesture for the other one.
And so the third person wins.
But it was just perfection. It was, like, literally perfect. I honestly don't think she could have done a better ending to this book. Like,
I also,
I'm not
I
kidding.
I think this gets into what Jen Comfort did really well here. Another thing. Neither of them are really playing for the money.
Mm-hmm.
She's already won $2 million. And while, yes, he donated his $2 million to charity, he's a tenured Princeton professor making $210,000 a year, according to the text.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So even, yes, obviously the big windfall would enable him to pursue some creative ventures.
Yes.
At no point are you concerned that winning is essential to either of their upper middle classness.
Correct. Exactly. Exactly. And then the person who won, too, was like, I know it's going to sound stupid, but like you were kind of rooting for them, too. Right.
Right. So it was the grand gesture was worth more than $2 million to them.
Yes.
LOL.
Yes. I loved it. Lane, you have some baseball questions for me, actually. Right.
Well, so I have two things.
OK.
One, I just want to I love it when authors do a subtle thing. You have to be reading closely to pick up on it. And like, they never make it explicit. So there's a running through line in this book about people being struck by lightning.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
As a statistical model of comparison.
Like,
is this more likely to happen than you are to be struck by lightning? Is this more likely to happen than you are to be struck by lightning? And she makes a throwaway joke at one point and says, like, do you want me to tell you the story of how my mom died? It's actually pretty funny. And there is a blink and you'll miss it throwaway reference at the very end where you realize she never explicitly says it. Her mother died being struck by lightning. And I just like, it's so insignificant to the text, but like, I love an author who rewards a close reader.
Yes. It was funny. It was actually even poignant too. I really liked it.
That to me is what elevates like a good book to a great book.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's not like the specific tongue-in-cheek secretness, but like the I can commit to a bit to the end of an entire thing.
The entire thing.
Loved it.
Mm-hmm.
So the final question that exposes the big bad is what team was wrapped up in the 1919 World Series? That changed sports betting forever?
Yeah.
Did you know the answer to that?
Yes, I did.
Okay. So this is, I'm such a baseball head that like, I don't know what is ubiquitous information versus what is me information.
I mean, I know it because I watched like baseball movies when I was young.
But I think a lot of people do. Like this is, just, like, it's a massive thing in American history.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think it's that niche of a thing. So my one, like, this is where I got kind of caught up in who Hercules the villain was. Because it turns out that he's this guy who's cheated at trivia his whole life and used it to fund and found various, like, fraudulent, schemey organizations pertaining to trivia and education. And they find out that he's rigging the thing. Because he gets the final question wrong and then essentially outs himself as, but that was the right answer I was given ahead of time, sort of thing. I just feel like even someone passively good enough at trivia to come up with this idea of a trivia scheme would have gotten that question right.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like he got...
It was an interesting, like, I can't tell if, like, it was meant to be a thing you read further into. I'm not saying it like a bad thing. Like I read it as more of a, the fact that this was such an easy question is also supposed to be making a statement about Hercules.
Yes. That's how I read it.
Okay. But that was the thing where I couldn't be like, am I the idiot being like, oh my God, and he missed such an easy one too.
No. That's what I read into it. It was really more, again, not, it was almost that he just wasn't even listening to the answers.
He was just rote memorizing the answer. Got it. Yes. Okay. I wanted to make sure I interpreted that correctly.
Yes. There was one other baseball reference, Lane, that I thought of you.
Yeah, when... well, that one was the baseball reference that's always in sex scenes. But that metaphor was taken to a new extreme.
There actually was one other one.
Oh.
It was when she was talking about, like, what she would rather be doing than hanging out with Teddy.
Yes.
And she was like, I would rather be caught blowing the World Series winning Boston Red Sox.
Yes. Because she is a New Yorker at heart. Yes, I did have a moment of, oh, girl, don't say things you don't mean.
I only understood that one. I mean, I think I understood it. Like, I think I would have gotten it, but I only understood, like, how awful it was because of Elaine.
I mean, like, dead serious, if I say I would rather do anything with the Red Sox, let alone blow them, than do something, you, like, you know I mean it. Like, that is something you do not take in vain.
Yeah. But
no, I thought you were talking about when they were doing the, like, bases analogy, and then she starts talking about how she's going to choke up on his bat.
Yes!
And I was like, man, choke has two different connotations, doesn't it?
It sure does.
Anyway, this is the kind of vulgar humor I can get behind.
I really like this book. I really like Jen Comfort. I will read whatever she writes. Like, I'm loving her books.
Same. I recommended her to a friend I saw for lunch yesterday. Like, I am on this train.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. On the Jen Comfort train, for sure.
Well, thank you guys so much for listening if you stuck around post-spoiler tag.
Yeah. If you did, you know what to do. Rate, review, subscribe, and check us out around the internet wherever you can find Plot Trists.